Let's start then. I want to welcome you to this. I want to thank Michael Elliott from Rocket Dog being here as well as all of my staff, David, Peter, Carol. And I'm sitting here in Seattle in a hotel room on the waterfront watching some cruise ships go by. So it's an interesting, typical Seattle morning here. Low-hanging ceiling. The thing is, yes, we probably burn off as the day goes on. Turned out beautiful yesterday. This is the fourth of series of phone conversations we've had with some of the people that were featured in our book, Playing Your A Game. We've had it's been really interesting, and I think very enjoyable, and I think very educational. After doing four of these meetings, or the fourth one, I think I kind of thought a little bit about who we have on the call, and sometimes, and I think we've had all three of these types of people on these calls. We've had people who are kind of stuck in what they're doing, not interested in moving forward, just maybe listen in, see if they can decide, okay, what Blotch for doing is wrong, maybe prove that it won't work for them. We've had some people on here, and I think, again, this morning, some eager learners that are interested in learning what they can, and then we've had some other people that I think are have learned what to do, but they're unsure of how to proceed, and I welcome all of you on the call, and whatever level you are, where you are, what you want to do. What I'd like to do this morning is we have Brian Sabe and Chris Mueller. Both of them are clients of mine. Both are in the book and read about the practices. And it's kind of it's going to be real interesting. I called Brian's wife last night, and Linda says, "Oh, you want to talk to Brian, don't you? Brian's in Florida. He can't be on a call tomorrow morning." So I called Brian. Lost it, and she said, "And Brian doesn't have a cell phone. You can't reach him." So I called Dr. Chris Mueller, and he said, 6 o'clock on my day off? Okay, I'll do it. And I appreciate you doing that. But here's the situation with why I called the two. The topic of this morning's call really was how to achieve financial independence. And by definition, financial independence is having enough liquid assets saved, accumulated, that if something happened and could not practice, you and your family would be supported well. And Brian started with me 18 years ago, and why I'm not a financial planner and have not been the person that's helping with that, Peter Munton actually helped him, was influential in that early on, and that is Brian has done an excellent job of creating a practice that is, first off, he's in a small town, Red Deer, Alberta. Brian was one of the first accredited members of AECD, in Alberta. Brian has a practice that, while we won't call it strictly a cosmetic practice, Brian has emphasized complete treatment. Brian started a path right out of dental school. He started with the Pankey Institute, and he started with me, and I hesitate to put myself in the same category as L.D. Pankey. But he started with me, and he started with the Pankey Institute right out of dental school, and proceeded on the path to provide people in Red Deer with comprehensive care. He's been very actively involved with a implant study club with an oral surgeon, and has placed, in restoring implants. He studies the Jack Turbefill on dentures. He does a lot of implant-supported dentures. But I think the important part of what I would like to cover in this morning's conversation with Brian is the fact that he has become financially independent. He called me 2 years ago and said he was now practicing for a hobby. When asked what he meant by that, he said, "Well, we've paid off all of our debts. We've put enough money away that we could do it." And I will be, if Brian doesn't, I will give his wife Linda some of the credit on that. I'm sure Brian will too. She's been very careful with that. And then when Linda said that Brian probably couldn't be on the call, I thought, well, who else is on that pathway that could discuss this in the book? And I thought of Chris. So I called Chris, and Chris is very much on the same path. Chris started with me 2 years out of dental school in a small town here near Seattle, Port Orchard, Washington. It's a blue-collar shipyard town, and he is very much on his way to the same path as Brian. He's called me at the end of last year after, I think it was his first year working with me, and said he had an extra $100,000 in the bank, what to do with it. I could promptly make out a check to Bill Blatchford. he didn't do that, but he's very well on his way again this year, and if they continue on the path they're on, they will very early in their life be completely financially independent. So Brian started with me early, Chris started with me early, and we've both done very well. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to start with Brian. Let's take a look at the finished product a little bit. Brian, could you describe your journey somewhat shortly for us? Now, remember, you're not giving a three-hour lecture. Brian is going to be speaking in Orlando for a three-hour session. So, Brian, give us a little thumbnail synopsis of your journey.
Well, when I graduated from dental school at age 23, and you know, I did have to pluck my head out of my bum and get started. I associated in Golden. I hated Golden, so I moved to Red Deer. Associated, and after 6 months, the guy said, you have to buy the practice or move because I want to sell it. So I bought my practice at age 24, and then I discovered how tough it was to run a practice. And so that's when I actually got started with the old class program and then continued on with you from there on. And I decided what I wanted to do was to, you know, be the top dentist in the area. And so, you know, do full mouth reconstructions. There wasn't really cosmetic dentistry at that time. So I went down to the Panky Institute and started learning there, joined study groups, and just started taking as much continuing education as I could. Then did join the AACD as soon as I learned about it, got accredited, and just moved on that way. And it just,
Brian, you're breaking up, or can you speak a little more into your phone?
Just we followed the plan just to do as much education as I could and set the practice, and it just fell into place and just followed the plan.
So you started out with a plan to become financially independent, and part of that plan was to increase your clinical skills to be the best.
Yes. Yeah, I got good coaching along the way. I worked with Peter, and we worked towards financial, you know, looking after budgeting and you know, saving, you know, spending less than we made, and retiring debt, and it just, you know, exactly the way it was supposed to.
Just simply follow the plan. Brian, and talking about your practice, what percentage would you say your overhead is?
55%.
You work 4 days a week, and you tell us a little about the clinical dentistry that you do. You do a lot of you do some cosmetics, quite a bit of cosmetics, and you're certainly qualified.
I'm doing mostly what I do is restorative and cosmetic dentistry. That makes up about 80% of what I do. The other stuff is filler. So we do a lot of comprehensive treatment cases, whether it's done, you know, all full mouth rehabs all at one time or full mouth rehabs over 5 years. It's always we always set up a comprehensive treatment plan.
Everybody has a plan.
Yes,
and you're presenting comprehensive plan in a town where, I mean, Red Deer is not a large town. It's about 50 to 60,000 people. But it's fairly isolated, and a lot of people would say you need to be in a big city to do the kind of dentistry you're doing.
Yeah, we're fortunate. We've got a good economy right now, but it hasn't always been good, and it doesn't seem to matter. Do people still accept the treatment once they know it's available? You know, people want the best for themselves, and they don't even know it's available, and that's the shame. So we just, you know, let them know what's available, and they're following, and it just... It seems to be more and more, you know, people are saying yes all the time.
Brian, describe your marketing program a little bit.
We do radio marketing with 30-second spots 5 times a day on the radio.
How many years have you done that?
This is our third year.
Uh-huh. What else do you do?
I go out to speak at trade shows and to groups. And the other thing we do is the newspaper. Because we're a small market, you know, our newspaper ads, which we put in once a week, cover the area well. Same
Brian
with
has also done a lot of things in the lines of, and you probably have forgotten now, but for years he wrote a column in the local paper, Dr. Brian, Dr.
Oh, yes.
Sabe.
That was great.
He volunteered.
Good opportunity to do that.
He did that early on in his career. He's a well-known figure in the town. Well, Chris Mueller, let's talk about your situation. Give us a little thumbnail sketch of your practice for a moment. You've been practicing about 2 years when you met me. You said you graduated in 2000, and we started. Well, go ahead, you do it.
Yeah, I graduated in 2001 from the University of Washington, and was associating in a practice part-time that the selling doctor needed to leave for personal reasons, so he offered it to me. And so I bought that practice in 8 months out of school, and I actually looked into the Blatchford program at that time because I knew I needed a little help how to run a program, but it was too expensive for me, so I went with a less expensive coaching program. And things were going okay. We were producing in the 400s, which I thought was on my way. And then the practice next door, there's a practice about a block away. That doctor passed away unexpectedly and came up for sale. And I wanted the building more than I wanted the practice. The facility was too small, so but they were only selling them together, and I didn't know if I could handle two practices merging them as a, you know, these are two experienced dentists. So I didn't get what I needed out of the other coaching program, so I went back to Bill, and with his encouragement, I bought both practices and merged them, and went from there, and that's been 2.5 years now.
It's been 2.5 years, and when Chris called me, he wanted to know whether he should buy this practice or not, and I said, well, how much is Port Orchard growing? He said, not very much. I said, buy the practice, and he said, I don't know how I can do that much. I'm busy now, and I said, well, I know how to do that. We can make that work, and so, Chris, what are you producing typically in a month now?
Probably around 110.
Yeah, somewhere 110 a month, and what is your overhead run, Chris?
52%.
52%. So, either one of you, what would you think are the keys to keeping your overhead under control? I mean, what are the key areas that you look at?
Staffing. Yeah,
what percentage of your gross does your staff get?
20%.
20%. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, I would agree. Staffing is the main issue. Mine's also 20%.
20%. And just for those of you listening in, the national average is over 30% for staff, and that is really one of the things that we do. Now, in order to put the staff at 20%, you certainly have to put some systems in place. But number one, you need to have the leadership of the doctor, the right team members, and then you have to spend the time in the systems in place and training these people. Either one of you answer this question. What do you think would be the key areas that you have to perform it as a leader? Brian, I'm going to start with you.
The key areas I have to perform?
As a leader. I mean, what would you say is key to being the leader of a practice?
You have to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have a you have to define exactly where you're going so that they can follow you.
So you've got to define exactly where you're going and make that clear then to the team.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Chris, what would you say?
You know, when we started out, you asked me to put together a vision statement, and I thought it was kind of silly. I sat down on the computer, and, I mean, I thought it was a good idea, but it just felt kind of weird writing this on paper, and I dragged my feet a little bit. But once I had that, it ended up being a couple pages long. I found out I had more I wanted to say, and by doing that, I attracted staff members that, you know, really followed that. The ones who didn't follow it left or found themselves leaving, and it really changed the whole way. And having that vision, we read it every month together, and providing that has been a big key of how I've been able to get going on it.
So putting that, being forced to put that vision statement together, because I remember you went kicking and screaming doing that vision statement, not really wanting to do it. And Chris had a friend who had worked through my program, perhaps is actually in the same town, and he actually only works, is he only working 3 days a week now, Chris?
Right.
And during the process of working with me, he had done some personnel changes, and Chris said, that's not something I'm interested in doing. I said, okay, I'll work with you anyway. But once he became clear on his vision, once his vision was clear to him, what he wanted to create and where he wanted to go with his practice and his career, it became real evident real quickly that some of his current team members did not share that. And as Chris said, once that was clear, it was easy. Either they decided to leave or he decided to help them along that process. And he has now a completely new team of people. Of course, we're looking 2.5 years. But he's done well with that. Chris, what do you do marketing-wise?
We haven't done a lot since I was focusing more on retaining the patients. So we have a Yellow Pages ad that's only 2 inches wide, but it seems to get pretty good. We're starting now to gear up, doing the neighborly the welcome wagon baskets that go out to new move-ins, and getting a website going. So I haven't put a whole lot into marketing, but I'm getting more into
it. It was purchasing the second practice, so Chris has quite a patient load of people that are coming to see him, and he's in a town. It's a small town, and there are quite a few dentists there, actually. And it's about a 45-minute ferry ride here from Seattle. And we're starting to get people commuting back and forth a little more all the time. Chris, what would you say, in living well within your means and being able to save $100,000 a year by the end of the year, and I presume you're well on your way to doing that again this year, what would you say some of the keys in that are?
I've never been one to... for flashy items, just sort of living, spending less than you make. You know, it's I still drive my college car. I like it. And my staff all make fun of me. But like my assistant went and bought this expensive SUV, and she's the least paid one in the practice, and her car is worth 5 times what my car is. So, and I just think it's important to, you know, have your priorities, and just as simple as that, spend less than you make.
But now, you, having said that, it's not like Chris live at all. You did buy yourself a present this year. You bought a boat this year.
I did. I'm starting to change slightly. So.
However, you paid cash for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so one of the things that I see Chris's wife is a CPA, although she does not practice this. They're raising a young family, but they really do know their numbers. So when you hear 52% for overhead, that is a real figure. And his wife sends me on a regular basis profit and loss statements to look over. And I think both Brian and Chris will tell you that one of the keys is knowing where to look and controlling your overhead. And where to look is, and they both said it's staffing. That is really the place to look. So many dentists spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to lower their lab bill, how to save a little bit on their rubber gloves or their impression material by buying the cheapest gloves or the cheapest impression material. In other words, they're looking in the wrong places, and I was real pleased to hear both Chris and Brian say that staffing is the first place to look. You can save 10% there. If you save 20% on dental supplies, of course, you only save 1%, so yeah, it's not a really big deal. What would you say in the areas of case presentation and having people accept comprehensive care, Brian? What are some of the keys?
I think it's the enthusiasm. I think that they can sense, you know, when you're passionate about it, and I think they just get a feel that that's something that they want. As a matter of fact, if I'm off, when it's time for a vacation, it's time for a vacation because people aren't saying yes.
Uh-huh. Brian, how much vacation time do you take a year?
I take 8 weeks.
8 weeks, uh-huh.
We work 12, 14-day months, is how it works.
12, 14-day cycles.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And how about your staff? Do they take 8 weeks off as well?
Yeah, everybody gets the same time off. The only thing is when I'm gone during the week, we have one person come in the morning just to recall the messages and phone people who didn't leave a message.
So they take time. They take turns coming in from first thing in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, no, they're there for an hour.
Oh, they're just there for an hour.
Yeah.
To answer the phone, return calls.
Yeah,
and I think
we have issues with caller ID, and so we call everybody who, you know, if they didn't leave a message, we call them back and say, we noticed you called and didn't leave a message. Can we help you?
Uh-huh.
And we don't have
good.
Because they don't, I mean, I don't believe that there's much value in having someone sit in the office for 6 hours.
No.
Wait for the phone to ring.
Chris, what are you doing for vacation time?
Oh, it takes 6 weeks.
6 weeks, uh-huh. And how about your staff?
They also take 6 weeks.
Uh-huh. So here's the situation. Both of these doctors are earning more than they need. saving money. Brian has already accomplished what we call financial independence. Chris is well on his way. What are some of the questions that some of you doctors on the call have? I'm going to start with Randall. Questions you might have for either one of them.
Yeah, is it pretty easy to get your staff to go along with your vision and stuff?
I can answer that.
Go ahead,
yes,
Brian.
It is, because if they don't, you find someone who will.
Pretty easy to answer, isn't it? I think one of the questions that we look at, or one of the things, a question to answer that with is, one of the things that I see, and this is just a question, and I was talking to Brian earlier this morning, I said, you might want to use this question in your talk tomorrow, from patchwork to complete treatment. And the question is, are you accepting less than you deserve? And I think that's a great question for doctors to look at, and sometimes I believe that we accept less than we deserve when it comes to our team. We accept staff members less than what we really deserve based on your training, your desires, and the amount of energy you put into this, and we sell out, and we just simply accept less than we deserve staff-wise. To have staff members that don't buy into your vision 100% is certainly accepting less than. Chris, how would you answer that question? Is it hard to get your staff to accept your vision?
Well, when I started with my vision statement, I had 7 staff members from the 2 different practices merged together, and I went, not one of them wholeheartedly embraced it, and it was just overwhelming. As you know, things changed. First off, I needed a new hygienist, and just having that vision statement, one of them came in, and I was in this office from 1970. It did not look like I was providing, you know, great dentistry from the facilities, but she read that vision statement, and she just bought into it, and she's been a real key to my progress, and it helped me attract staff that were wanting to go the same direction I wanted to go, and you know, the ones that didn't really buy into it, they just, most of them ended up quitting.
Uh-huh. Chris had some people that had been in the practice. He had one hygienist who would walk in the front door of the office, go straight to her hygiene room. She didn't even know they had a Panorex in the office, and that's who he was dealing with at one point. She said, oh, well, you brought that with you when you moved in. Didn't you know it's been here for years? And it's just incredible. They were just doing their own thing, and vision is critical. It's a good question. Randall, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, you really have to assume the leadership of the practice. Frank, do you have any questions for them?
Sure do. My biggest concern in my practice is I'm too busy. I'm busy seeing a lot of patients, but I'm not producing a lot. And how do you change over your practice from that type of a practice where you guys talked about coming in to answer the phone? Well, gee, I can have a lot of emergencies during the middle of the winter season in there. And I don't want to do that type of dentistry anymore. How do you change your practice over? How do you get the word out? And how do you find the time to really completely evaluate and treatment plan these patients and get them to accept?
Ryan, why don't you take that first? I mean, you've created a practice there in Red Deer that does not depend upon emergency patients.
Right. What you have to decide kind of where you're going to go and, you know, what type of treatment you want to provide. And then, you know, then I think the key thing is to get your schedule set up so that you allow yourself time. Bill has called it block booking. And you schedule it so that you've got the time to do the big cases. Because when these people accept big cases, they want it done now.
Yeah, I know that.
And so you have to leave time. You start scheduling to leave time to do those big cases. And then it will happen. And if you're busy now, you look at your schedule and see, you know, start scheduling for productivity rather than filling all the blanks, and your life will get so much easier and be more profitable.
So part of it goes back to what you said, Brian. It goes back to having that vision of what you're trying to become. It goes back to those goals of what you want to do in your practice, what you want to produce, and start to work towards that. And what I find is so many doctors that working extremely hard but not very productive. You know, it's really interesting that my clients that I've worked with for years are very, very productive. And while Brian and Chris are very productive, You know, we have clients producing as high as, I think last year we had two practices, both women, one dentist in each practice, doing just exceeded $3 million in production, and yet they both work three and a half to 4 days a week, take 8 weeks vacation, and when you go in and watch them work, they're not any busier or working harder than people that are struggling to do considerably less than that, but they do have a plan that they're following, and they schedule towards that. Chris, you converted two practices that were pretty much patchwork-type practices, and you have, and again, I'm going to emphasize the fact that Port Orchard is a shipyard town. It's not a town that, it's not Bellevue, Washington. Everybody says, well, yeah, it's easy in Seattle. He's got all those Microsoft people that making $1 million a year. You don't have those kind of people in your practice. How have you converted to practice in that emergency patchwork treatment?
Well, it's starting with scheduling. You've got to get your schedule under control. We do the block booking, which means I have two blocks every morning, 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock, and I don't want anything in there except multiple units or, you know, something that's, you know, where I can sit down and be productive and get the hard work over for the day. No emergencies in that time, no distractions. And if my front office tries to put somebody in there, I let them, they hear about it. It was reserved for main appointments. And then I'd say two other things are important. You've got to take time. When I was in that first practice, I didn't ever want to do a staff meet because I was afraid of, I was too busy, you know. I wasn't busy. I was busy being ineffective. But if you take time and sit down and train your staff, then you can start seeing their staff's going to start talking comprehensive care. They're not going to talk it if you don't ever sit down and train them to do it. So you've got to have staff meetings that are more than just a lunch hour in between patients. So
more than just who's going to clean the X-ray processor.
Yeah, you've got to actually, and we start our staff meetings off with training. We don't start off with issues that are going on in the office because those always seem to take up how much ever time you'll give them. So we start with training, and once that's done, then we can talk about issues. And then the last thing I would say is just, I found I would, you know, do a crown on a tooth. Emergency come in, broken tooth, we do a crown on it, end of story. And then a year or two later, the tooth next to it, and I look at my new crown next to this other one. I'm like, why didn't I do those at the same time? And so I just take a picture of it, and now I show them, I'm like, here's your broken tooth. And I show the other, what some of our patients opt to do is take care of teeth adjacent or in the same quadrant or in the same side that also could be going down that same pathway, just a soft sell. Do you want to take care of this while we're here? And I'd say 75% of the time they do. And then you just converted a less effective appointment to a, you know, something more comprehensive and productive.
So where did your staff learn that question? Would you like fries with your burger?
I mean, that's all part of the coaching program. One of the things we've been working on.
But I think it's important that what Chris is saying is that it's a lot about helping your, educating your staff and the training your staff, and the training has to come early, and you've got to have, of course, the right things to train them. And Chris's staff has learned real well how to present comprehensive care to people and let the patient decide. And so it's a very soft sell. We're not trying to educate them into submission. We're just asking the questions, and Brian's team does the same thing. They probably are every bit as effective as selling the dentistry as the doctors are. So it's not that tough if you know where you're going. Who else has any questions here? What questions do you have for Brian and Chris? I mean, here are two doctors who are doing extremely well financially, working 4 days a week with 8 weeks off, or Chris with 6 weeks off. But Chris is very new in practice. Brian's been at it 18 years. What other questions do you have for them?
Brian and Chris, what made you decide to hire Bill? Why did you, what, why did you think you couldn't make these changes on your own?
Well, I can answer that one. You know, my decision to hire Bill happened. I mean, this is, you know, I've been with him for almost 20
years.
Breaking
up pretty badly.
I've been with Bill for almost 20 years, so
much better.
My decision to initially was because I didn't know, you know, how to run a practice. And things have changed dramatically in the last 20 years since I started. But over this course of time, I've been a client on and off now, mostly on, for the entire time. And what I need is a constant. I just need a coach. I mean, you look at the top performers anywhere, and they have a coach. You need someone to bounce ideas off who's impartial, who hasn't got a, you know, whose agenda is to help you. That's his whole agenda. And, you know, you don't have any of this other baggage, so you're making decisions, you know, based on that. So that's why I continue to be a client. It's, you know, it's just something that when I don't have it, I go back later and then we fix the mistakes. And I decide to skip that stage where we're making the mistakes.
Thanks.
Great. Chris?
I would say, I mean, to be honest, none of this stuff is really rocket science. It's, you know, when you hear it, you're like, oh, well, that makes sense. Yeah. And I tried to do it on my own, and I tried to do it with this other coaching program. And, yeah, it's just, I'm just exhausted by the end of the day doing dentistry. And that and the inertia of making changes, it's easy just to wait another day before you make a change. And it just dragged on and nothing was happening. I couldn't get my staff to go on. And, I mean, you kind of inside, you know what you should be doing, but how to get there is a different thing. How to actually, what steps to make, when to make them, you know, the motivation to make them. It really helped me to have a, you know, some sort of a, be accountable on making these changes. You know, I've got to do this by next month. I've got to, you know, got to start, you know, do something this week, and then actually having the steps in front of me to do really helped me move forward.
You know, you said something really interesting, Chris. You said it's so easy. You're tired at the end of the day doing dentistry, and dentistry is exhausting. You know, I did it for 20 years, and dentistry is exhausting physically. It's hard work. You treat every single patient, and when you're tired, it's real easy to wait another day to make a decision and to make changes that you know you need to do. And as Chris said, it's not rocket science, although one of the things that we find is there are some things that you learn from working with 1,800 practices over the years, and there are certain characteristics that you just do these things. It absolutely works. And if you were to visit Brian's practice or Chris's practice, while they're different practices, I can assure you there are some characteristics in both of their practices. They would, I'm not surprised, but they would find very, very similar. One is that vision is very strong, and that's an easy one to put off. I know of very few doctors who actually have a written vision statement that, as Chris says, they read it, or one of them said today, they read that with their staff every month. I have not run into a doctor yet that I've interviewed that has not worked with someone who has held their feet to the fire but actually has a written vision statement. But if I were to ask the team members, what is that vision statement, they would have a clue. And yet that's one of those things that we actually put in place before we move on. I think the training of the team, it's easy to put that off. And Chris says what they do is that the first thing, it's not the last. So those are a couple keys.
I have one other thing to add to, like you asked why you would hire a coach. And after dealing, like I've been, you know, as a client of Bill's for the last number of years, I've also met a lot of his clients. And they're, you know, it's a enthusiastic group. But as a businessman, you know, one of the things you have to look at is dollar in. If I put a dollar in, I want $1.50 back out. And I have yet to talk to anybody who's followed the program. Now, this is followed the program, done the stuff, who has not seen an incredible increase in their net. And that's, if you want to look at the number one reason from a business perspective, is that's why you do it. And the number two is, the other thing is that the people who are doing that, when your business is successful, you become much happier.
Yeah, I think that's good, Brian. I appreciate that. And I think that's one of the things that I see, is so many doctors are frustrated with their net income. And dentistry, truly, is a license to print money. And both Chris and Brian exemplify that. It's truly a license to print money. And it's amazing to me how many doctors are frustrated with their net, and after a number of years are still working on, well, how do I do this? And yet there are some keys to put in place. Chris is a great example of doing it early on. I remember working with Brian 15 or 18 years ago, and at that time Brian was didn't have a clue what his overhead was. You remember that, Brian? And I said, I want you to do one thing. I want you to take over your checkbook and start paying your own bills. Remember when I told you to do that?
Yeah.
It was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I was talking about the roof on my house.
I remember that. And I wonder, you know, where your finances would be today had you continued down that path that you were on.
Yeah.
Ryan was doing dentistry, loving dentistry, having, you know, loved doing the clinical dentistry. He was down at Panky and doing a great job, but his finances were completely out of control. And, you know, by saying, look, here's what you need to do, Brian, this, this, and this, and then following up a month later and say, okay, how, what are you doing, has made a difference there. Peter, what questions do you have for either Brian or Chris that might be useful to doctors on the call? Frank and David, I'll ask you the same.
Well, I think they both have exemplified people that have a level of discipline, too. And I think that's one of the keys that they've both been talking about here, is that they're coachable. There are many people, I think, that are looking for a silver bullet, and there isn't necessarily a silver bullet out there. This coachability is a key. Brian, would you say that that's one of the factors that's influenced you, is that you are amenable to coaching, or how would you suggest someone else?
Yeah, you have to be willing to take some ideas, and you have to take them on. Sometimes you have to do it on a leap of faith that this will work, because sometimes intuitively it doesn't make much sense. Like you talk about block scheduling, leaving time open. You know, that's absolutely frightening for some dentists. And they just can't.
Well, I remember in your case, Brian, it was probably, you used to hold that faith open and do training sessions rather than let them put anything in at the last minute.
Yeah, I still don't. I don't let them put anything in. If I'm going to waste my time, I might as well waste it reading. You know, there's no point.
You know, I would like to thank you, Dr. Bill. This is David Curry. I would like to add or ask a couple of questions. Do either of you doctors have either of you made the observation that when you were starting, that perhaps the team members that you were associated with were not paddling in the same direction? You know, was that an observation that once you made impacted what you wanted to do thereafter?
I would say when I started, all seven of them were paddling the other direction.
all seven of them were paddling the other way.
Yeah.
What did that feel like?
It was just miserable. But, I mean, it had to happen. I was under the impression that I needed to retain these staff members to retain the patients in this practice. I needed to provide that continuity there for the patients. And for a couple of months, maybe that was true. But in the long term, these people were not, you know, they were loyal to the old doctor's way of practicing and did not want to change. And it was difficult. But once that was changed, it was like the sun had just broken through the clouds. It was the best. That was, that alone right there was worth every penny of the coaching fee. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Well, I remember we had a few late night phone calls from Chris during that period of time, because it was very frustrating for him with these team members who, and actually we won't call them team members, they were staff members, that absolutely did not see it the way Chris saw it, and what to do, and he's in an area where employment is really tough. As those of you know, the economy of Seattle is wonderful, and there's really no unemployment, and so it's hard to find people, and yet the late phone calls were, what am I going to do, and saying it's all going to work out just fine, you've just got to do this, and that was tough for Chris. I mean, he was committed to keeping these people, and yet they were not committed to him. So that's always a tough part. But that doesn't always happen. Brian's had the same people. Colleen was with you how long, Brian?
17
years, and she just through the whole process. She gave him 5 years notice about retirement. And
I had to talk on that, too, because, you know, we often live in fear of losing our staff members because we're looking into the unknown. And, I mean, when I was just dreading replacing my receptionist because she was, she was good. And she was following the program, but the new girl we've got, we hired the right person, and it's like Colleen who? It's just gone up. Our production's gone up, everything's better. So sometimes we'll put up with all kinds of stuff because we're scared of finding the right person. We won't be able to find the right person, and we'll put up with the wrong person for a long time. Now, Colleen wasn't the wrong person, but between the choice of who I've got now and Colleen, I would take the one I've got now.
Uh-huh.
She's better.
And Colleen was excellent. She was there with you the whole time we worked together.
She was excellent.
And yet you've got somebody just as good or better. How many did you go through to find this new person?
Well, actually, we went through one.
Okay.
We had a pretty good reference on her.
Uh-huh.
And my hygienist has been with me for 22 years. Mm-hmm. Worked with her in another office. And this was... Christy actually left that office because she didn't like the type of dentistry and the way it was managed.
Mm-hmm.
She went to work for an equipment manufacturing company, but she wanted to get back in dentistry.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that opportunity came, she took it.
You say your hygienist has been with you the entire 22 years?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So it's really not about rapid staff turnover. It's about finding the right people and then retaining them if they're the right people.
Yeah, but don't live in fear of... if they're not performing, don't live in fear of the discomfort of having to find someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work. Yeah, you see it all the time.
Did anybody find people that were maybe a little bit ahead of them and they couldn't keep up with them? Staff members that were maybe had a little vision that was a little ahead of yours.
I've seen that. I don't think that happened in either one of these two doctors' cases. They're out there not all the time as a leader, but I have seen several cases where that happened.
Well, early on, I mean.
This is Carol, and I've had team members who were, their husbands were relocating or something from California to Minnesota, and they would call us to see if there's another Blatchford office that they could work for because they could see the benefits they would get from, one of our offices compared to regular dental offices. And sometimes some of the Blatchford, I shouldn't say that, but I mean the team members that have left the Blatchford office and couldn't find another office to work in that we were coached, they will try and get the doctor, if they would have that vision to take the doctor to another level, because it takes a while to get that doctor, I guess, to trust in them to call us at that point as well.
We've literally had staff team members call us and say, we want our new doctor. I've moved, and I want my new doctor enrolled in your program. Chris, tell me about your staff. Speaking of this, does your staff bonus on a regular basis?
Yeah, our average was over the last 12 months is a little over $800 a month.
A piece.
Yeah.
Brian, how about yours?
Yeah, they're doing really well. Matter of fact, for the last 3 months, my bonus has exceeded my staff costs.
Uh-huh.
So the last month.
So that means that their total income, more than 50% of it, was bonus money.
Yeah, well, with the hygienist and the receptionist and the assistant, both have, they get more bonus than they do salary.
Not wonderful.
And
you're still at 20% for staff.
Yeah. So last month they got $3,800, the month before that was $3,500. That's pretty good.
That's wonderful. That's excellent.
And they've they've all got this thing figured out now. It took a long time for them to figure out that what it's working out, but they're pushing me hard now. It's almost like I want to back off because it's hard work. I'm not going to.
They won't let you.
No. They don't let me weed her out sometimes when I don't feel like doing something.
Well, that's great. I want to thank Brian and Chris, Chris especially, since he had to get up at 6 o'clock on his day off. I really appreciate you being on this call. Brian, I appreciate you. I know you're getting ready to give your lecture in Florida. Thank all of you for being on this. I'd invite you doctors who are listening in on this to really listen to what Chris and Brian had to say this morning, because here are people that are actually doing what a lot of doctors would like to do. They're financially successful. They're not killing themselves doing dentistry. They work hard, but they have put themselves in a position where they're 52 and 55% overhead. Their staff are bonusing well, and yet they're still able to save money and get to a point where someday they don't have to practice dentistry if they choose not to. Brian's already at that point, and Chris just has to follow the plan now, and he'll be at the same place. So if we can help you with that journey, we would love to do that. And I know some of you are working with Peter, Carol, David, looking at enrollment in our program, and I would welcome any of you. Thank you very much for being on the call this morning, and have a great weekend.